Begin the current daf Masechta Shabbos daf Pei. We begin on the bottom line of Ayin Tes Amud Beis, where the Gemara continues discussing our Mishnah and the theme of our Perek regarding the transportation of an item from one domain to another domain. That's the Isra Beit Sa on the Isra of Shabbos. So the Gemara quotes from the Mishnah, says Diyoy regarding transporting ink is Kedei Lichtav. That would be the amount to write, which the Mishnah said Beizos is to write two letters. That would be for, let's say, if you have on two different parts of a keli or mashing up the sukkah boards, you have one, two, so you know how to match it up. So that's enough to write two letters. That would be considered a significant amount of ink for it to be considered haitzah on the Isra Shabbos. So we continue on to the top of Peyam Adav, where the Gemara explains. Time to learn the Braisa. Shtei Yosis Bidyoy, that the amount for haitzah on Shabbos are the amount for two letters of ink, and that's when it's dried already. Shtei Yosis Bakumis, or even if it's two letters in the quill. In other words, wherever the transportation of the ink is going to be, it's always going to be the amount of two letters, whether it's dry already or whether it's still in the quill. Shtei Yosis Bakamorin, or if it's two letters in the inkwell. Either way, it's always going to be considered a shear regarding the amount of two letters. That's considered chashuv. Less than that is not considered something significant because people don't need ink for less than two letters. By Rava, so Rava has the following question. Oisachis bidyoy, if the amount of one letter is in the ink, that is dry. Oisachis bekumis, and the amount of one letter of ink is in the quill. And oisachis bekumor, and the one amount is in the inkwell. Maho, what's the halacha? In other words, do they all join together or not? Now, he brought out all these three letters, one in the form of an actual letter, one in the quill, and one in the inkwell, and he carried all these things out. Now, do they join together, say, now you have three letters, so definitely you're going to be chayv in Isra Yitzah and Shabbos? Or do you say that, no, that they don't join together, that each one is considered independent? And then you would think possibly is a question, but if you're carrying out the quill, so then you should be chayv for Yitzah just for the quill itself. And the Rashi says you're not chayv for the quill because that's considered tuffel, that's secondary to something that's less than the shear, because if it's considered independent, it's considered one letter on its own, that's not the shear for itself for ink. And now this quill or the inkwell is considered secondary to the ink itself, as the Mishnah later on, Sadi Gimel Amit Bey, says that someone that takes out food less than the amount in a vessel, he's potter on itself, even on the vessel, because the vessel is considered secondary to the actual food item. And therefore, if you potter on the food, you potter on the vessel too. So therefore, the question was, do we say that these three items are mitzarf, that they join together, and therefore you're carrying out three letters? Or they say that no. If you have two dry letters, or two letters worth in the quill, or in the inkwell, so then each one would be liable, but each one independently together is not going to be mitzarf. The thing is, take it, let it stand. It's not clear if they would join together to have the isra b'tzah of ink, of two letters, because they are independent features, one in the letter itself, one in the quill, and one in the inkwell. Amar Rava, related to this topic, the Gemara says, Haitzi shtei oisis. Rava says if someone transports two letters in any form, let's say in the quill, that amount of ink. V'chosven kushu malacha. Now he writes it as he's writing, and that is, he didn't stop, which would be considered when he stops his body, that's considered hanocha. As we know, regarding the malocha v'itzol, you have to have both nakira, picking it up from a spot, and hanocha, putting it down. Now, if you pick it up and then you stop, so that's considered the hanocha when you actually stop. But here it didn't stop. However, the question is, even though he wrote it as he was walking, so he never actually came to a full stop with the ink, the two letters worth of ink, however, Rava still said that you're chayiv. Why is that? You didn't have a hanocha, you had just a kira, and it disappeared, so to speak, when you were still walking because you wrote it. And the reason is because the writing is considered the placing of the ink. And therefore, since the ikar of the hanocha, of the placing of the ink, is in writing on a piece of paper, so therefore, when you actually write it, that's considered the hanocha of the ink. So although you were walking, that's considered the hanocha, and therefore you're chayiv for the tzah of the ink in that form. Moreover, Amar Rava, Rava says, if someone carries out one letter's worth of ink and then he writes it down, and then he goes back and he carries out again in the same lapse of awareness, so therefore generally they're mitzarf, and he goes and he writes his potter. So Gemara says, my time, what's the reason? It's one helam. We always say that when it's one lapse of awareness, it joins together. So let's say you eat a half a kezias and nevela, and the same lapse of awareness, you have another half a kezias and nevela, that it joins together. So here also, you carried out one letter, and another letter should be mstaf to the two letters of the Tzah and Shabbos. So he says, it's for a technical reason. In the time that it takes to go ahead and take out the second letter, now you're already lacking in the measurement of the first letter, because what happens is that it dries, and then some of the measurement for the ink is lacking. And therefore, when you finally finish up the haitzah, now that to join them together, there's no more shear anymore of two letters because it already dried up. So if it's at the same time, if it dries up later, it doesn't make a difference because you did the haitzah. But here, by the time you get the second letter out, the ink's worth of that, it's already the first one dried up a little bit, and therefore you're not going to have a shear of two letters worth, and that's why you put. Related to this, about chatzi shear, about having half at a time, V'amar Rava, Rava says another halacha. Hoitzi chatzi gregris achas v'nichav. Someone takes out a measurement of a half a worth of a gregris, which is a dried fig, and that's the shear we use for most of the halachas of the chiyuv haitzah on Shabbos. So he carries out a half of a dried fig and he puts it down. Then he goes back. Now he goes back and puts another half of a dried fig and he puts it down. So again, that we're talking about that you have the full shear of a gregus, which is the shear of Eitzah. However, Rava says, the first half of fig is already like it was caught by the dog, or we're qualified as if it's burnt already, and therefore he's potter. So Gemara says, why is that? What do you mean? It's just lying there. And therefore, since it's in one lapse of awareness, it should join together, and now he had a complete Eitzah, because the Shev Eitzah is like a gregus, like a dried fig. So he took out half, now he went back and took another half. Why does it not join together? Why do we consider it as if the dog caught it, or that it's burned, and that it's not there anymore? Well, it's lying right there. Sigma is Hachim, and this is what we meant to say. If you went and then picked up the first half before you placed down the second half, then Nasas Rishayna Kamisha Nikolikata Kalev Aishanisravapata. Then we consider as if the first half was like as it was caught by the dog, or that it's burned, and therefore you're going to be potter. Because the Mishnah says later on, the Kovbezim et al, someone throws something and the dog catches it, you're potter. Because the Hanocha was not from your Kayach. You only did Akira, the dog, so to speak, did the Hanocha by jumping and catching it. Here also, when you finally finish the Haitzah, the original Hanocha is not there anymore. And it's like it's not there. It's like the dog caught it. It's like it got burnt up. It got consumed. Because by the time you put down the second piece, you already picked up the first. Now there's nothing to join together. And that's the case that we meant, that if you take out half and another half, you're going to be potter because the first half is not there anymore to join together. Also, another din related to this topic, more from Rava. V'amar Rava, hoitzi chatzi gregris v'nichav. Someone took out, he did haitzah of a half a dried fig, and he put it down. V'chazor hoitzi chatzi gregris, then he went back and took out another half a dried fig. However, he did it in a certain way. As he was bringing out the second half, he went over the airspace of the first half. So therefore, Rava says, chayv, then you're liable. But the Gemara asks, but it never had a hanoch, it never was placed down. We're talking about as you're transporting the second half over the first half, then you're chayv already. But what do you mean? You have to have a hanoch, you only did an akira. How could it join together to be chayv for the shev itself, a gregris? So the Gemara says, kagoyin shev virutuch shleish, we're talking about that if he passed over the airspace, within three tvachim of the first piece on the floor. And that's kiyudua, the shear of lovet, which is that when we say something within three tvachim of the airspace of something else, we consider it as if it's joined together. And that's why you're going to be chayiv, even if it wasn't placed down yet, because we see it together already with the first piece. But the Gemara asks, v'amar Rava teich shleisha, but Rava said, this halacha of being within three tvachim of the airspace of something else, the Rabbanan tzarech hanocha gabi mashehu, that although we say that when something is within three tefachim, we view it as if it's there already. And therefore, Rava said that when you're throwing something and it's within three tefachim of the ground, although that it's in a sense already there on the ground, that it should be considered hanocha, but the Rabban require at least technically some type of hanocha that even on something that's a mashu. That is, the Gemara brings later in Hazayrik that the Rabban argue, and they don't hold to the concept of kluta kamisha huncha that Rabbi Kiva holds up. They don't hold that something that's in the ear space as if it's placed down in it. Even if it went very close to the ground, they hold that you're not liable for it to be considered akir and hanocha until it actually lands on something, even something that's very minute. But it has to be a space of something. And again, you don't need to have a mokum dalad like you usually need to have of four tvachim squared, since it is within three tvachim. However, they do hold you have to have it landing on something. So therefore, the question is, how can we say that because it passed the airspace, but the Rabban hold doesn't make a difference. The airspace is within three tvachim, so it is more lenient. We do view it in some sense as it's on the ground, but it's less land on something. And here, it's still in his hand. It never landed. So the Gemara says, loy kasha, because it could be even very well according to the opinion of the Rabban. Because kan b'zayri kan b'maver. There, that when you have to have a hanocha, was talking about that you're throwing it. Here where we say that it's enough, even if you're passing within three tefachim of the first piece, that it's enough is when you're talking about when you're carrying it. When you're carrying it, you don't have to have hanocha because he's holding it. He has, so to speak, the hanocha in his hand. And his hand is close to the ground. That hand is considered placement within three tvach. There, when you were throwing it, Rabban says, okay, I understand, it's within three tvachim, but it has to touch something. It's in motion, and it's not on anything, so it doesn't have anacha. Here, it's considered on the hand, and the hand being within three tvachim is enough to consider it as if that's the anacha, and therefore it's not difficult. And even according to Rabban, to say it has to land on something, here they would agree that when you're holding it and carrying it within three tvachim, it's as if it was connected to the first piece, because it's within the three tvachim of that piece, and therefore it joins together, and you're going to be liable even if it wasn't actually put down. So on this topic, the Gemara continues. Turn up on the brisa. Hoitzi chatzi gregus. If someone takes out on Shabbos a half of the measurement, which is the measurement of a dried fig, and then he went back and took out another half of a gregus in one lapse of awareness. So then you chayiv again because that joins, it's one lapse of awareness, and it'll be considered one share of itzah. If it was done in two laps of awareness, that is, after he did the half of the Gregor, says, oh, what I do with Shabbos, and then he forgot again, took out again, so then you're going to be potter because they don't join together. Rabbi Yossi, I'm Rabbi Yossi, makes the following qualification. Even behelam echad, it's only l'rshus echad that you chayv. Even if it's one lapse of awareness, it has to be that you took out the two halves into the same domain. L'shtei rishui is potter, but if you took it into two different domains, then you're going to be potter. And that is, even though they're both Rishus Rabban, but there's a separation between the two of them, then, although it's one lapse of awareness, they won't join together because it's not the same Hoitzah. It has to be the same Hoitzah into the same domain. But if you were in Rishus HaYachad, and you did a half of a Gregor into one Rishus Rabban, and then we had a separation between them, and you took it into another Rishus Rabban, that won't join together, even though it's in one lapse of awareness. So the Gemara brings three explanations for this machlokes about what would it be considered to be considered two rishuyas that you potter, whereas according to the Chacham, you're going to be chayiv. I'm a rabbi. What we're talking about over here is v'husha yesh chiyiv chatis beinayim. This that we're considering it, that it's two different domains, and you're going to be potter, even if it's one lapse of awareness, according to Rabbi Yossi, is only if there's an area that would have a liability of a chatis between them, then you're going to be potter. That is, if let's say between the two rishus rabbis, you have a rishus hayachid, which is something that would be considered something that you chayiv a chatis on transporting from that rishus rabim to the rishus hayachid and then to the other rishus rabim, that would be considered a hafsik interrupting the two rishus rabims and to say that they're not going to be mitzvah. Of a karmelis loy, but if it's just a karmelis that is a rabbinic domain that would separate the two rishus rabims, that would not be enough of a separation. We would view the two rishus rabims as one, and therefore it would be mitzvah to be liable if it's done in one halam. And that's, for example, if let's say you have a house on either side of rishus rabim, and then you have between the two rishus rabbis, you have a karmelis, or one of these cases, let's say a bika, and you have these two houses open from the opposite sides, and then he takes from one house into this rishus rabbis, and one house into this rishus rabbis. So then we say it's only for this rishus yochid in between that we're going to say that separates the two rishus rabbis, and it won't join. But if it's just a karmelis, it's just a rabbinic domain, then we say that we view it as one rishus, and therefore it would be mitzvah even according to Rabbi Yaisi, and we don't consider it separate. That's rabbi. Abaya Amar, the second interpretation, afila karmelis. Now, even a karmelis would be considered interruption and you'd be potter, because even though it's rabbinic, but it is considered a separate domain and therefore it will not be mitzvah. It's considered two separate rishus rabbis. Aval pisla loy, but if there's just a block that separates the two rishus rabbis, that won't be enough of a separation. That's like a piece of wood that is laying to the width of the rishus rabbis and it fills up the whole width. And then he takes out a half of gregus from his house on this side of the rishus rabim, and then from this rishus rabim, we say that that's not going to be considered enough of an interruption to view it as two rishus rabims. That brick, although it's separating it, it will not separate it from this halacha, and it will be mitzvah. For Rav Amar, no. The third interpretation is afilu pisli. Even this block will separate the two rishus rabims, and that is v'azru Rav l'tamei, because Rav goes according to his opinion that's said elsewhere. Damar Rav rishus Shabbos k'rishus gittin damyu. And we view the domains of Shabbos as the domains regarding the halachas of Gittin. And that is, we say by the halachas of Gittin, that this pisla, this block, is considered its own domain. As the Gemara in Hazarik in Masechtas Gittin, the Ayin Zayin Mabeis says, that if a person throws a get to his wife in his yard, and it rolls onto this block, and it stays over there, so we say that he only loaned her one place in his yard for her to be considered to be mekabel her get. Not two places, and therefore we see from the halachas of Gittin that the block will be considered its own domain, and therefore the get will not be a get if it falls onto that part, because he only gave her a place in her chatzar. So therefore, the same way to apply to the halachas of Shabbos, that we would view the block as a separate domain, and therefore it's enough to separate the two rishus rabim, although it's really one rishus rabim, which is a block running through. On that, Rava says that would be considered enough of a hafsik, and therefore, according to Rabbi Yossi, even though it's in one lapse of awareness, we review it as two separate rishuyas, and you're going to be potter for the tzah on Shabbos for the two halves, and they won't join together. Now, Gemara resumes discussing our mission that says regarding kol, eye paint, what would be the chiyuv, the minimum amount to be considered something chashuv that you're liable for the chiyuv of a tzah on Shabbos? That's kedei likhol ayin achas, that's enough to paint one eye. That's the type of makeup that they would use on the eye. So the Gemara asks, ayin achas, holo kachli. Which woman paints one eye? You paint both eyes. If you only have enough makeup, eyeline or whatever it is for one eye, you're not going to do it. So why would you be liable if you have enough for one eye? So Amar Rav Huna Shekid Snu, it's not true because there are certain modest women that they go wrapped up and they only have one eye that you can see and they have it covered somehow, that shetel or whatever it is, that now you could only see one eye and that's the eye they paint. So therefore that is enough to be considered a Shir Vaitzah even just for one eye, because there are modest women that only uncover enough for one eye to see through, not to have both eyes revealed, and therefore they'll use makeup just on one eye. And therefore it's considered a significant amount to be chayv for that tzah on Shabbos. However, on this day, we asked Meisve, we learned Reb Shimon Elazar Omer, Kol, what is the sheer haitzah for this eye paint? So it depends. Im l'refua, if it's used for healing purposes, k'dei l'chalai nach, it's enough to paint one eye, because you'll use, if one eye is hurting you, you'll use that paint to help the eye. Im l'kashin, but if it's for adornment purposes, for makeup, then b'bezenayim, then it's for two eyes, because, again, which lady goes out with just makeup on one eye? They go with both eyes. So you see a contradiction. Here it says that it's for makeup. It has to be with both eyes. And that the Gemara says, Tirgum Ahil Bered Reb Shmuel Ben Achmeini, that he interpreted that brisa that's talking about Kitanyahu Bironis, because that, what were you talking about? That the brisa said that you need it, if it's for adornment purposes, it has to be makeup for both eyes. That's talking about by the village women. And that is over there, they don't need to have that much modesty, because that's not so much schlik and kalasroi, it's not so much levity that's over there in the villages, not like the city life. And there's very few people. There they don't, even the modest women, don't cover their face, and therefore there they paint both eyes. So in the, by the village women, yes, there the makeup would only be liable if there's a shear for two eyes, because there's not like the city where you have to require a greater amount of modesty to keep the level of Kedusha, and therefore there, by the villages, it would only be makeup, even for the modest women, just makeup for two eyes, whereas when we said that it's enough for one eye, it was talking about by the city women. So now the Gemara resumes discussing the mission that says Shava, the amount to have the Hitzah on wax, is because they leap to not be neck of cotton, is the amount when you have a hole in something to be able to take things out, the amount of wax to put onto that small little hole to cover it up. So Tanya, we're learning the Braisa that explains what is the small hole that we need wax to cover for. They leap to not be neck of cotton shal yain, that's enough to cover the small little hole of a barrel of wine. That's coming to exclude, let's say, oil or honey, because wine flows out through a very small hole, even smaller than by oil and by honey. And therefore, we're saying even that small amount, you can be chayiv for enough wax to cover that small little hole. That would be the shear of itzah on wax. So the Mishnah said regarding devik, the shear for transporting glue on Shabbos from one domain to another domain, is k'dei lita mereisha shashav, is the amount that's put on to the top of a board. So the Gemara explains exactly what is this case of putting a, when are you putting glue on top of a board, that that's the shear of itzah on glue. So talking about the braisa, k'dei lita mereisha shashav, is the amount of glue that's put on the top of a board, shebereish kana shel tzion, that's on the top of a reed of the trappers. And that is, they used to put a small little board on top of a reed pole, and they would put on the glue, and the bird would sit on top of that thing and would get stuck in the glue over there, so therefore he has to put a lot of glue so that the bird should get really stuck. That's the amount of glue that's necessary to put on top of the board that would be used as some form of a trap to get the birds and that they should be stuck on top of the board. And that's the amount of glue that's necessary for the chiyuv itzah on Shabbos. So then the Mishnah said, Zephis v'gofris, regarding pitch and sulfur, that's k'delasus v'chul, that's the amount to make a hole in that pitch and sulfur. So the Gemara brings a braisa, explains, Tana, we learned, k'delasus neck of cotton. It's the amount to make a small little hole, and that is, as we explained in the Mishnah, that they would make mercury, and they would keep it in this little vial, and now they had to get the mercury out, so they would put in this pitch and sulfur on the edge, and then make a hole in that, and now the mercury would come through there. That's the amount that you could make a hole in that. That would be enough of the pitch and sulfur to make over there, that you could make a hole in the pitch and the sulfur. Charosis, we said regarding crushed brick, is k'delasis pikur v'chulu. The Mishnah says the amount to make the opening of the crucible, whereas Rabbi Huda says the amount to make a tripod to hold up the kur, to hold up the crucible itself. So the Gemara asks, lememra, it would seem to say, the shiur Rabbi Huda nafir said, you're saying that the amount, the measurement of Rabbi Huda is much greater, because the amount to make just an opening of the crucible is definitely less to make a tripod for that. So you're saying that Rabbi Huda has a larger shear. That means he's more makel, that you're not liable until you have that larger shear for itzah. Rakaimalon, but we already said previously the Shud Rabbanan Nafish, that the measurements of the Rabbanan regarding the Chiv of Itzah and Shabbos are larger and they're more makel than Rabbi Yehuda, and not that Rabbi Yehuda's are larger. It's not as I learned in our Mishnah regarding the rope. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, could they lead to Lemen and Midas Minel Kadin? Yehuda says that you're going to be liable for the Chiv of Itzah and Shabbos for the rope, even the amount that you take for the show the shoemaker, the size, I want this size for the shoe of my child, which is smaller than the case of the Rabbanan, that they said has to be something that could be used to hang on the sifter and the sieve. So therefore we see Rabbi Yehuda is more machmer, that his shoem are smaller. So how can we say over here that he's the one that holds a tripod, which is larger? So the Gemara says, doesn't mean the crushed brick to make a tripod itself. Ema could they lost it, rather means to plaster the holes that's in the pitput kirikatan, that's in the tripod on the small stove. The amount that is required to plaster the little holes, which is that's smaller than the shear of the opening of the crucible. That's what when we meant to be here. It doesn't mean to make the tripod itself. It means to fill in the little gaps, the little holes. That's the shear of the crushed brick to be who the holes you're going to be chayiv, and that is the shitas, the Yehuda holds the more chomer digger shitas, that the shear are smaller than the other opinions. The Mishnah said regarding subin, the chiv of itzah of bran, could they lead to not be crucial surface of, that it's the amount to carry, that it's meant to make the opening of the crucible to put in there as fuel for the refiners of gold, because if they didn't have coal, they would use bran. That amount that's necessary to go ahead and burn it up, that they could continue their refining, that's the amount of itzah that's necessary for the chiv of subin of bran. We continue on to Amid Beis. The Gemara brings a brayse to Torah Bon. Hamoitzi sar, someone that takes out here, what's the shear of itzah on that? That's kadei legavel bayas atid, that's the amount to be kneaded with clay, because here it's good and it improves clay. That's the amount that it could be used for that purpose. Again, that would be considered a significant amount, and then you be chayav on itzah on that. Tit, what's the amount of transporting clay on Shabbos? That's lasis pi kurshel surface of, that's to make the opening of the crucible, that's the place where they melt all these metals of those who refine the gold. That's how much clay would be necessary to be chayav for itzah on that, to make that opening where the blowers are there. That would be the chiv, that would be considered a significant amount to be chayav itzah on that. What's the halacha regarding sid, regarding transporting lime? So that, we said in our Mishnah, we had three different opinions. So the first opinion is, okay, they lost it. The amount to smear the small part in the little girls, that's the amount to be chayav in the shir of itzah on lime. So Agamara explains with the braisa, Tana. Okay, they lost it, etz b'ketan shababonis. The amount to smear even a small finger of a little girl, that means even a pinky, that would be enough to be chayav for the shear of itself of lime. Because what they used to do, they used to smear the entire body to make it red. It had these chemical properties in it that would make a shine on the person to redden them, to make them look beautiful. So even the amount for a pinky to smear the girl, that would be enough for the chayav of itself of the lime. So the Gemara explains regarding this custom of smearing with lime, that's the shiv itzah of Sid. Amar Yehuda Marav, Benois Yisrael Shagila Pirkan, regarding the Jewish girls, when they reach their period, that is, they get the time of the two hairs, and that shows that's the simonim of an adult. However, Lohigila Shon, but if they didn't reach the years yet, which are fitting for it, and therefore they're embarrassed that they have already matured much greater than their counterparts, so they didn't want to have those hears over there. So what they did was, the poor Jewish girls would smear it with lime, and lime, what it does is it takes away the hear, so therefore they wouldn't be embarrassed anymore from their friends. The wealthy girls, they would smear it with flour, and that's less harsh than the lime, and it accomplishes the same thing. The daughters of the kings, they would smear it with the oil of myrrh, like it says in the pasuk, that the royalty they would smear themselves with the oil of myrrh for 6 months. That was over there by Esther Hamalka. So we see that it has certain properties of beautifying and reddening the complexion and taking off unwanted hairs. So Gemara asks, my shemen hamur, what is the shemen hamur that the royalty would use for their daughters? So the first pshat the Gemara brings, Rav Huna bar Chiya amas setachas, it's perfumed oil. Second pshat the Gemara brings, Rav Yemi bar Abba amas, that what does it mean, shemen hamur? It's shemen zayish le'viyah shlish. It's olive oil that wasn't yet a third mature. You take that olive, which is only a third of its growth, and then you go ahead and use that. That will be the type of oil that's necessary for the getting rid of the unwanted hairs. That's called shemen hamur. So Tanya, we learn the Brayis of Yehuda Omer, am piknoin is shemen zayish le'viyah shlish. The olive oil from the olives that weren't yet a third mature, that's on piknoin. So the question is, Why do they smear themselves with these different things? Again, with the lime or the shemen hamor. Why do they do this? Because it takes off the unwanted hair and it makes a glow on the skin. Again, that was the reason why they used the lime. That was for the poor girls, for the wealthy girls, the shemen hamor. It makes them beautiful. And that was the reason for these things. And again, that's why the share of Sid is measured according to how much would be necessary, even for one finger, because it accomplishes the goal of getting rid of the hair and making the skin radiant. So Gemara brings a story related to this topic. If Bibi Havi Lebarta, so if Bibi had a daughter, Tafla Eva Ever, he went and he smeared her limb by limb with this lime, again, to make her beautiful, to get rid of the hair and then bring out her red complexion. Shukabud Dalad Mezuz, and then he took for her 400 zuz. That is, she became so beautiful that all the those who were fitting to be suited for her in marriage, they were all jumping to get the opportunity to have such a beautiful girl, and they gave a lot of money, up to 400 zuz. So Havahu Nochi B'Shavus, it was a non-Jew that was in his neighborhood, and he saw what happened, that he smeared his daughter with lime, and she became so beautiful, and he was able to make so much money off her. So Havin Labrata, he also had a daughter. Tafel B'Chad Zim No Mesa. So he went and smeared her with lime at one time, and she died, because it's too much, it was too powerful, the chemical properties in it. He didn't have the patience to do limb by limb like Rav Bibi. So I'm going to say he said, Kutl Rav Bibi Labarti, Rav Bibi killed my daughter. I mean, that is because he learned from him to do this, and that's why his daughter ended up dying. So the Gemara comments on this. I'm Rav Nachman, Rav Bibi Deshasi Shichra, Rav Bibi who drank beer, and that is, he was from that locality where they would drink beer, Boyin Bansi Tafla, so his daughters need these different items to get rid of the hair, and that is the lime that they used because they were hairy. We do not drink beer. Our daughters do not need these different smears, these limes. And that is because beer, it makes dark and it creates more hair. So therefore, they needed these things for their daughters to get rid of the hair and for the dark skin. But for us, if we don't drink beer, we don't need to have it for our daughters. Now the Gemara resumes discussing the topic of Sid in our Mishnah. That is, the first opinion we said was enough to smear even a small pinky of a girl. The second opinion in the Mishnah was, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, the share of Eitzah for Sid for lime is kedei losid kilkel. It's to smear kilkel. And then the Gemara, and then the third opinion in the Mishnah brought was, Rabbi Nechemi said, was on dipi. So the Gemara asks, my kilkel, my dipi. We understand the first opinion, which is this thing that's used to take off the hair, and that's enough to even use on the small pinky of a girl. That's the Shabbat Sub. What's Kilkel and Adipi of Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Nechemia? Some Rav, they're respectively Tzida Ubas Tzibada. That's the temple and the area under the temple. Rabbi Yehuda was talking about the area of the temple that they would smear it over there to take away the hair that's there. And the area of Rabbi Nechemia, when he says Andipi, that was Bas Tzida, that's under the temple. That's to take away the stray hairs, those small little hairs, that's Andipi. So the Gemara says, "Lememr d'shur de Rabbi Yehuda nafish." That sounds like you're saying that the measurement of Rabbi Yehuda is larger. That's because he's saying that it's the temple, which obviously has more hair than the area under the temple, which Rabbi Nechemia is saying. How could we say Rabbi Yehuda has a larger shir? That means he's more lenient. Hakaimel d'shur de Rabbanan nafish. But we said, as we mentioned on Ahmed Aleph, that the measurements of the Rabbanan, in contrast to Rabbi Yehuda, is larger than the shirim of Rabbi Yehuda. As we said regarding Gemi, regarding the reed, that we say that the shir of Rabbi Yehuda is smaller. And that he says the measurement of measuring the shoe size of a child to bring to the shoemaker and not the tlai, the thing to hang on the sifter and the sieve. And that Yehuda is the one that's more machmer. Yet here we find that he says, the way you're interpreting is that he says it's the amount to take out for the temple. And Nechemia is being more makel, that he says that it's that Nechemia is being more machmer, that's the area under the temple. But we said Yehuda is the one that's more machmer. So the Gemara says, it's not so shver. Zutim the Rabbanan, but nafesh Rabbi Nechemia. Yes, in contrast to the opinion of the Rabbanan, there Yehuda is more machmer, because his shear is smaller than the opinion of the Rabbanan. Because the Rabbanan, which was the first opinion we said on the Gemara before, that's amount to smear a small little pinky of a girl, that's larger than Rabbi Yehuda's shear of kilkel of for the temple. However, he is still more and more lenient than the opinion of Rabbi Nechemia, so it's not so shver. In contrast to the Rabban, he is more machma, but he's more mekel than Rabbi Nechemia. However, the Gemara asks Meisvei, this can't be the interpretation of Kilkel and Andipi, that it means the temple and the area under the temple. Because we learned Amar Rebbe, Rebbe said, regarding this machlekes between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Nechemia, Rebbe said, Nirin de Rabbi Yehuda bechavet, it seems to me that the chiv of Eitzah of lime would be like the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda only by chavet, by dissolved lime. That's lime that was dissolved in a lot of water, and that's used for smearing kilkel. So there, it'll be like a Rabbi Yehuda of kilkel. However, did Reb Nechemya be Beitzes Hasid? That it would seem to be the shear of Eitzah on lime, like Reb Nechemya, would be when it's a lump of lime. And that is when it's kneaded with water and it's like clumps. It has the shape of eggs, of like small little clumps. And that is generally used to smear for Andipi. And therefore, I understand they have this machlekes if it's kilkel or if it's andipi, but when it's going to be dissolved type, that's generally how we use for kilkel. So then it's going to be like Rabbi Yehuda. However, when it's made like these clumps, these small little egg shapes, then that's what we usually use for andipi. Then it's going to be like a nechemi for andipi. So now the Gemara follows through and says, v'isol kadaitech, and if you're going to think that andipi is also used for the here, like you said, that kilkel is used for the temple, and andipi is the area under the temple, which means obviously to take care of the here. However, tzidu, that as you said, tzidu bas tzidu, but idvidi chavit, so then they're both going to be used with chavit, with dissolved lime. And that is because kilkel and andipi is ultimately the same thing, because you're saying it's to get rid of the here, and that's going to be used with the dissolved lime, and therefore it's going to be the same shear. So why would Rebbe say that I like the opinion of Yehuda regarding the dissolved lime and the opinion of Nechemya when it's the lump of lime, this small egg shape, but it's the same thing, they both be here, and therefore they're both used with dissolved lime. So why would the opinion be like Nechemya when it's the lumps? It sounds like they're two different types of things, not the same. And if you say it's the temple and the area under the temple, they're really the same. So Elam Yitzchak says, correct. We have to give a different interpretation for what does it mean, andipi. What Reb Nechemya's opinion was, it wasn't andipi, it's andipa, which is, that's a type of a kli cheres, an earthenware vessel that has two different spouts, spigots. It has one on the top and one on the bottom. And when they wanted to fill it up, they would close the bottom spigot. And the word andipi, it literally means two spouts, two spigots. That's what andipi is. And therefore, for that we said, that Rebbe says that then I like the opinion of Reb Nechemya, because again, then you're going, that's what the clumps are used to clog up the spigot. And that's the different opinions. It's not the area under the temple. Maybe Kilkel is a temple, but Andipi is in reference to this type of a klicheris that has these two spigots. On that opinion, Maskevel Rav Kahana asks, does a person make his money like forfeit, that it's going to go to waste? What he's going to put in a vessel that has wine, he's going to close it up with lime, and then the wine is going to dissolve the lime and it's all going to come out. How does that help? How is he going to close up the bottom spigot with this lime, even the clumps? It's going to dissolve the lime and it's going to come out. How could that be andipi, to close up a spigot? Elam Rav Kahana, you're right, that's not what the andipi means. It means something else. It means shnosis. It means markings. It means different signs that when they had a very large earthenware vessel and they had different markings that would be sticking out like a small little nut, and it would say up until here is a saw, up until here is two saw, and they would smear that with lime so that it should be white and you could recognize these markings to see what they are, like, you know, 100, 200, 300. Because now, as you learn in the Mishnah regarding Menachis, that we said shnosis ho yibahin, that there were these different markings in the hin, which was a type of measurement, which was adkan lepar, up until here is the amount you need for the par, for the bull, that's a half a hin. Adkan la'ayl, up until here, that's needed for the ram, that's a third of a hin. Adkan lekeves, up until here, is need for the sheep, that's a revis and a quarter of a hin. Like it says in the pasuk, chatzahin yilapar, it says in the psukim, all the different amounts. So they had these different markings. That's what we mean on dipi. That was the opinion of Reb Nechemya, that the shifrit saw for lime is the amount that can be used for the markings. That's what he said, and that's what Rebbe was saying, that I prefer the opinion of Reb Nechemya by when it's the lumps, because that's the type of lime that they used for the markings. That's one opinion, what Reb Nechemya meant with andipi. V'ibayisema, my andipa, what does it mean andipa? Apusa. It means the forehead. So it's not the area under the temple. Rather, it's a place where there's no hair at all. And it's just to redden the forehead, to bring out that complexion. And therefore, that's why he says, that Rebbe says that it's a different thing, b'chlal. It's not like we said before, that's the temple, the area of the temple. And the Gemara asks, therefore, why would Rebbe be mechalik between when it's lumpy like, or when it's like this dissolved type, that if we hold one like a brother, one of the chemi, if they're really the same thing, to take care of the here, because the temple or under the temple, saying, no, we're not talking about, it's not the area under the temple on DP. It's talking about the forehead. And it has nothing to do with here. And therefore, that's a different property. That is generally used with these lumps. And that's just to bring out the red complexion. And the Gemara proves that on DP means a forehead. Like there was this person from the Galilee that came to Bavel. The Amrulei kum drorish lona b'maisim rekava. They said to him, go and lecture for us in Maisim Rekava, which is the chariots, the great mystical teachings of Kabbalah. So Amalahu Edrusluchu could the Darsh Reb Nechemiah Lechavi says, I'm going to lecture for you in the Meister Merkava, like Reb Nechemiah went and lectured for his friends. However, since this was improper, Vinafkis Ar Isa Min Kaisel, so a horn that came out from the wall, Umachte Ba'andipi, and it stung him in the forehead. So we see Andipi means a forehead. Umis, and he died. Va'amri Lei, and they said regarding him, Mindi Lei Dolei, that from himself it came to him. In other words, it was his own undoing that he got killed through the hornet, because he should not have been lecturing in the Ma'aseh Merkava, in the great chariots of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Shechina. Therefore we see that that's the opinion of Andipi, it means the forehead. So we ultimately came up with two interpretations from Andipi, either that it means these markings that were there in the barrel to show up until where that they would use it to make it white and you could see it, or Andipi means the forehead, and therefore that's the machlokes, the three different opinions we had regarding the Sherbetzah of lime. Either it's the mount to smear a finger of a girl, even the pinky, or it means kilkel, which is the temple here, those hairs over there to take care of it, or it means the forehead, which is the third opinion. There's two interpretations, either Andipi means the forehead, or it means the different markings that there are in the Kli Charis. Now the Gemara continues with the next mission, again, talking about the theme of our parak regarding the Sherbetzah of transporting something in Rishus Rab. So we begin with Adama, regarding transporting earth on Shabbos from one domain to another domain. The amount that's necessary to be considered a chash of amount is kachaisim hamratzufen, like the seal of cargo sacks. That is, they used to have these sacks that were made out of a large wood, that made out of the bark of a tree, that they would carry merchandise in it onto the ships, and they would seal it with earth. That amount of earth that can be used to seal it is already enough to be considered significant to be chayv for itzah on Shabbos. Divrei Rabbi Akiva, that's the opinion of Rabbi Akiva. The chachamayrim kachaisim igris, the amount that's necessary to seal a letter. And that is that they would seal the letter that someone that's not necessary, that's not for him to be reading this, should come to it, only for the one that's sent to. And the share of the Rabban is smaller than the share of Rebbe Kiva, that it's even the smaller amount that you be chayv for the tzah of earth. Then the Mishnah continues, Zevel v'chol adak, regarding transporting fertilizer and fine sand, that's kedei lazavel klach shel krum, that's the amount to fertilize a stalk of cabbage, even one stalk. The Rebbe Kiva, that's the opinion of Rebbe Kiva. Even the amount to fertilize the leek, and that is a smaller amount than what's necessary to fertilize a stalk of cabbage. The Mishnah continues, regarding coarse sand, that's the amount that's put on the full spoon or the trowel of a lime. And the Gemara is going to explain that it's talking about the spoon of the plasterers. That amount of earth that's used in the plaster would be enough to be considered a shev itzah for the coarse earth. Mishnah continues with another item, Kana, regarding a reed. What's the Sheva itself for the reed? Kedilasis kumas, the amount that could be used to make a pen out of it. However, Imhoya Ava Imerusis, but if it was thick or if it was crooked, either way, it was cracked, that it can't be used to make a pen out of it. So then what are you going to use it for to be chayfait saw on it? If you take it enough, Kedilavashal by Beyakalash of a Beitzim, if you take it enough to use it as fuel that you could cook an easily cooked egg, the Gemara is going to explain which is an easily type of cooked egg. But not only that, it's an easily cooked egg, that it's terufa v'nesuna b'ilpas, that the egg is already beaten and it's put into a pan. That little amount of fuel that's necessary to go ahead and cook it is the amount of the kana, of the reed, that would be necessary to be chayav for the shevetzah, again, if it was thick or cracked, and that it can't be used to make a pen out of it. So now the Gemara explains, we said regarding the chol hagas, the coarse sand, we said, yuchayev al moli kavsid, the amount that's a full spoonful of lime that's on the spoon. That's the amount of earth, the coarse sand that would be used for it. So Tanan that we learned, kedilitna pikavsha sayad, we're talking about the amount that's put on the opening of the spoon, of the trowel, of the plasterers, that amount that's necessary to go ahead and finish off that product, they use coarse sand, that would be considered the chiv of itzah, and the coarse sand that can be used for that is something chashuv enough that they use it for the plasterer's a trowel for his kaf that he uses for the lime. So the Gemara asks, so we said that, obviously that it sounds like you put on this coarse sand into this lime. So the Gemara says, man tan de chul malu, they said, who is the town of our mission that holds that sand, albeit coarse sand, is beneficial for lime and that's used as it, and therefore it's going to be considered something chashuv if it could be joined together with that amount. So Amar Rav Chizkiya Rabbi Yehuda, that town of our mission is Rabbi Yehuda, that he says that coarse sand is something that's used, it's beneficial for the lime. The town is learned in the Braisa, a person should not smear and uses a coating for his house made out of lime. And that's regarding because after the Churban, after the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, as a velus for mourning of Yerushalayim, we don't use lime because it's something that's too beautiful. Elam can irv by tevenachel, only if you mix in it straw or sand, then now it's not going to be so white. So now it's not going to be so white. Now you can use it. Behuda Omer teven mutter, straw is permitted. Chayil asa, however, to use sand is forbidden. And the reason is, memneshu terachsid. Because when you put in the sand, it makes the lime very strong and becomes very hard, more stronger than if you would not have mixed it in. So therefore, you see that it's Rabbi Yehuda that holds that sand is beneficial for lime, that it makes it very strong. And that's why he's the Tana of our Mishnah, that he says that it's something that's the required amount that's used for the lime. And that's why he says you can't use it because it's something that's making the lime even better. And therefore, after the Churban, you can't use the lime, and definitely not if you mix sand in it. However, Rav Amar, Afilatim Rabban, you could even say the Rabbanan are the Tana of our Mishnah. And why is that? They seem to say that sand is not beneficial for the lime. And the reason is this, because kilkulei zeh tikunei, what's bad for the lime is really a remedy for the lime. And that is because if you wouldn't be ruining the lime by adding in this coarse sand to make it darker, then it wouldn't be mutter. And therefore, the fact that you make it stronger is really making it better, and that's why you're measuring with it. In other words, because it doesn't make it stronger. And in other words, they don't agree to Rabbi Yehuda. However, from the fact that now you're making it darker, it's not so white anymore, now you could use the lime, because we can't use the lime anymore after the Churban Beis HaMikdash. So therefore, he is the Tana of our Mishnah. What's the shear of itzah on the sand? It's the amount that you put into lime. Because although it doesn't make the lime better, it makes it worse, but the fact that it makes it worse, it makes it dark, now you can use it. So therefore, in a sense, kilkulei zeh tikunei, making it worse is making it better, because now I could actually use it. And therefore, they could also be the Tana of our Mishnah. So the Gemara continues, quoting from the Mishnah that says, Kana, regarding the shir v'itzah, and the reed, is k'dilasis kulmas. Is it enough to make a pen out of it? So Tanu learned the Braisa that elaborates and says, kulmas ha-megi l'kishe etzbaitz. It has to be enough to make a pen out of it that will reach the joint of the fingers. In other words, you can't make a pen this small. You have to be able to write normally. That it reaches the joints of the fingers. That's the shir of a pen that you can make out of it. So Boyer Vashi asks, when we said it has to reach the joints of the finger, did we mean kesher elyon or kesher tachton? We mean the upper joint or the lower joint? In other words, is it the part which is halfway through the hand, that's by the knuckles? Or do we mean the lower joint, which is the middle of the finger? Which joint do we mean that's how far the pen has to get? Take it, let it stand. It's not clear how long the pen has to be for the shear to be chayav netzah on the reed. So the Mishnah said, regarding the reed, but if it's thick or if it's broken, then you can't use it to make a pen out of it. So what would be chayav for the tzah on the reed? It's enough to make, to cook, the easily cooked egg that's already beaten and it's already in the pan. That's a very little amount of fuel. So the Gemara says, Tanur, then the Braisa explains, not only that it's beaten, but terufa b'shemen. It's even beaten in oil, which gets very easily cooked because oil is a very good conductor. V'nesu n'bilvas, and it's a pan. That's how little fuel you need. Did you hear about, regarding this halacha, that we said that enough to cook an easily cooked egg, which egg is considered easily cooked egg that's enough to be the chayv, the shir of itza on the reed? So, Amalei, he said to him, Beyasa de tzeltzla, says it's the egg of a small dove, a very small egg. So this is my time, but what's the reason? Why is that considered an easily cooked egg? Shum de zutra, because it's very small. So he says, if that's the case, even the tzifrasa say it's regarding the egg of a hummingbird, which is even smaller. And why do you say that it's a small dove? So Ishtik was quiet. So it's a good point. If it's considered easily cooked, the smaller it is, the easily is cooked. So Amalei, so he said back to him, Midish me'ilach b'ha, did you hear anything about this halacha? So it says, Amalei hochi, this is what Rav Sheish said about this halacha. It's a beitza tarnegoilis, it's a hen's egg. That's the most easily cooked egg that to be liable for the shir v'itzah of the kana. My kar lebeikala. So why do we call it an easily cooked egg? Shir chacham ein lecha beikala levashu yesem beitanegalis. Because although it's not the smallest egg, but the chum said that there's no more easily cooked egg than the egg of a hen. So then the Gemara asks, why is that the shir v'itzah of the reed? Umayishna kol shiuri Shabbos kegregris. Why do we say regarding all the different measurements of Shabbos that we said it's in the shear of a gregris of a dried fig, whether for consumption or for transporting or for doing ketziro or tchina, we said everything is regarding the shear of a dried fig. And here we said regarding the transporting of the reed is enough to cook an egg, and this is the size of an egg. Why should it be the size of an egg? It should be something the size of a dried fig. Why do we say the size of an egg? Samalei hachem Rav Nachman. It is like a gregris. Kegregris mibeyakala. It's the volume, that shear of a dried fig, however, of the consistency of an easily cooked egg. And that is from the egg of a hen, which gets very, very easily cooked. However, not a full egg is the measurement. Rather, the size of a dried fig, that volume, in the what of what type of a item, that's going to be of an item of a egg of a hen, which is the most easily cooked egg. That would be the chiv or shir v'itza of the kana of the reed that's broken or that's too thick. Again, not a full egg. Rather, the item is the egg, but the shear, the actual measurement is going to be the shear of a gregis, like old shear or Shabbos are, both regarding haitzah and other things of Shabbos.